Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hal McNair penned a letter yesterday, Seth. He sat down at his desk with his feather and his quill, and he dipped it in the ink, and he, in cursive, I like to think it was in cursive, and it got transcribed onto a computer somewhere. And Cal wrote a letter to the city of Houston yesterday. So we welcome you back in here on a Friday on Payne and Pendergast.
Do you think he dictated it? Old school style, while a secretary wrote it on a typewriter?
No.
What's more likely? He did that, or he spoke it into Gemini or some kind of AI, and they cleaned it up a little bit and wrote it for him?
Or didn't even speak it. He said, just, hey, Gemini, write a letter to the season ticket holders and the fans of Houston about how excited I am about Nick Caserio and D'Amico, the upcoming season, and that we got a stadium thing we're working on right now, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all going to be all right. It's all going to be all right.
In writing a public statement, I'm not saying it is shade or anything. If you're a public figure and you write a letter, you get a little assistance from the PR folks.
Oh,
and everything.
For 100%.
Even if it's in your own words, you tweak it a little bit and everything before you put it out.
Even if you're really good at writing letters to people.
Unless you're somebody like Mark Cuban or something that's just totally shooting from the hip all the time.
Yeah.
I think the vast majority of them would, they'd craft it carefully.
Yes. And I think Cal falls into that category for sure. So the letter goes like, I'm not going to read the entire thing. The first part of it, Cal expresses his excitement for the upcoming season, how proud he is of what the team's done so far with D'Amico and Nick at the helm, but there's more to do. There's new heights. He used a lot of the same catchphrases that Nick and D'Amico both use. You know, he mentions special work ethic and relentless mindset. He mentions getting to new heights. These are all things D'Amico has said. He then talks about how much the team means to him and his family, the passion that they have for it. You know, his dad bringing football back to Houston 25 years ago is a big, big deal to them. Giving back to Houston is a core value of theirs. And then it gets to what I think is the crux of the letter and the impetus for it. If I had to guess, off the field, he says, Cal McNair says, there have been several articles written in recent weeks about the future of NRG Stadium. Although we're 7 years away from the expiration of our lease, I want you to know that we're working collaboratively and diligently with our partners, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Harris County, and HCSCC, which I'm guessing is the Harris County, I don't know what that, Harris County something or other, to identify the best path forward. With those partners, we've conducted a number of studies and continue to learn more about what we need to be successful in the future under the leadership of our new team president, Mike Thoman, who has an extensive history of developing and renovating stadiums. I think that's an important detail here. I think that's a big, big impetus for why Mike Thoman is the president. Not only is he a very capable and accomplished executive, very well respected around the country, this is his area of expertise, or one of many areas of expertise he has. He's been involved in the construction and management of a lot of big, noteworthy stadiums. Concluding, we support a renovation of NRG Stadium and are committed to exploring all potential solutions to ensure long-term success. We want to ensure we have a world-class facility that provides a competitive advantage for our team and a great experience for our fans while standing tall as a community asset. Ultimately, with our valued partners, our goal is to find a solution that works for all stakeholders involved, where everyone feels like a winner. And then he thanks everybody for their support, and go Texans. So, I think what Cal would like to be the big takeaway there is that everybody's working together right now. We all know that the stadium is not ideal for the year 2025, or I guess more importantly, the year 2032 when the lease is up. And as of right now, the stated priority is renovating NRG Stadium. I guess the elephant in the room, Seth, and the question that needs to be asked is to provide the competitive advantage and, more importantly, the experience for their fans that stacks up in this day and age. Is NRG Stadium an appropriate starting point for a stadium like that?
Yeah, and just remember from our conversation with Thoman and other things that I've read and listened to about this. A huge part of it is, okay, getting people into the stadium smoothly and efficiently. That a renovation could, it might involve a lot more than, you know, just a nice paint job and a few things. There's some pretty big structural things you'd have to do. But then they also like these big concourses where people can stand and watch. Well, they're having almost a sports bar type experience.
Yeah.
So I think at the very least, if we're going to get really, let's get really cynical about this.
Okay.
My most cynical theory about this would be, okay, what if they are just making a display of a good faith effort to try to renovate the, kind of the same way somebody might, you know, if you feel like you're going to divorce your wife, you start a couple years in advance really putting your best foot forward.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
At some point, she's going to bring up that you forgot to pick up the kids 7 consecutive times from Little League.
Got to be out in front of
you were
that.
Drunk. Yeah. Right. So you want to be sure that you start doing that. And then you also, you know, go above and beyond a few times. Oh, she doesn't mention the time that I bought her flowers on Valentine's Day and took her out to a fancy restaurant, I suppose.
Right.
She just wants to talk about negative stuff.
Right.
Yeah. So at the very least, if you're the most cynical, I think this would be, all right, you're making a display of a good faith effort. I do think that, I think they genuinely, if the circumstances are correct and if they get the deal they want, it would make sense that they want to renovate for multiple reasons. There are a lot of advantages to going out to a suburb, being able to build from scratch, from the ground up, not to mention the tax breaks you might get. And that's the negotiation part that could end up taking a few years is what kind of extra little perks do they get and how does the negotiation with the rodeo go?
Yeah, right. And that's a big thing. That's something that people need to remember. The Texans stadium-wise are in it. Okay, thank you. Harris County Sports and Convention Corporation is HCSCC. Yeah. Thank you, Texter. This is a unique situation. None of the 31 other teams in the NFL, many of whom have gone through this exact process over the last several years, have a partner with them, like the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, that shares the venue with them, that, let's face it, was a big reason why you were able to secure this stadium in the first place to bring football back to Houston back in the early 2000s. And they know that. The McNairs know that. I think just from a logical standpoint, I don't think you need to be an engineer. I don't think you need to be sitting in these rooms with all these people and know what the studies they've conducted entail to look at the situation and go, renovating NRG Stadium to make it look like a reasonable facsimile of what a state-of-the-art facility looks like today. Yeah. What a state-of-the-art facility looks like today is way different than what state-of-the-art looked like when this stadium was built, obviously. Because at the time it was built, it was viewed as a high-level stadium. But you don't have to be an engineer or be in those rooms to know that logistically, the type of renovation of NRG Stadium that we're talking about here is going to be really hard to conduct without disrupting a football season or a rodeo season or both.
Yeah,
unlike other football stadiums, that stadium is not in primary use for just August through January. It's in primary use August through January, and then you have this thing that sits there from late February into early April that is one of the staples of the Houston cultural scene here for the last several decades.
Yeah, it's hard to operate a massive construction project while you're also having one of the largest rodeos in the world. A
lot of dirt.
Going on, with not to mention A-list
concerts,
celebrities coming in and out.
Yeah.
It's dicey. Now, I mean, just even think about, even if you can envision doing the renovation in the stadium itself and how they might have to maneuver around and section off areas or anything. Just all of the staging outside the stadium for the construction companies and everything else like that. Where you'd love to be able to have all the contractors set up exactly where people are also eating their gigantic turkey legs.
You want little kids walking around and people eating food with gigantic pieces of machinery and dirt flying everywhere.
Right.
That's what you want.
They got construction workers coming to the job site carrying their jackhammers on the conveyor thing there where everybody rides across. What the hell is that called?
The conveyor thing?
The gondola deal there. It's like the ski lift, but across the, you know.
Oh, you're talking, okay, I thought you were talking about a construction thing. I know what you're talking about, the amusement park thing, like a sky ride. Like a skyrocket. Yeah.
Whatever they call it.
Yeah,
you got a guy carrying his jackhammer on the skyrocket.
Oh, sitting on the
skyrocket.
I thought he was... Okay. I thought you were
talking... I was talking about a construction thing, Sean. I was mixing it with the skyride.
I thought the skyride was was a construction thing also. Yeah, I didn't know what you were talking about.
That's what they could do, is they could turn some of the cranes into carnival events.
Yeah. Oh, that's an easy
one. You
know? Yeah.
We could get lifted up on the crane... high above the stadium,
right.
And then we'll swing you around a little bit,
right.
And then set you back down and pick up a girder.
They could have it where they let kids actually handle a jackhammer. Like, that'll be three tickets.
Yes.
That'll be three tickets, and you get to jackhammer out one big pallet of concrete.
They could raffle off dynamite technician certificates or something.
What could go wrong? So,
there's a part of me here, and I think a lot of our listeners might appreciate this. If you've ever thought about renovating an old house, because I found myself in this situation, you talk to architects about it. I'll say multiple, because look, the architect doesn't want to help you work on your renovation project. They want to build something new from scratch, so they can make their mark in history. And I'm like, well, you know, it'd probably actually be cheaper just to tear that building down and build a new one. And I'm like, listen, dude, I know what you're up to here, all right? And then 2 years later, in a near divorce later, you're like, oh gosh, I really should have just torn this thing down. The architect wasn't lying to me at all. This has been a nightmare. That's a tricky thing with renovations. It's harder to project costs with renovations than it is to build something from the ground up.
Yeah, a lot of overruns for sure.
Yeah.
All right, a lot of people weighing in. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I have a feeling figuring out what to do with the dome is going to be a big part of any NRG renovation deal. I 100% agree with that. 100%. Like the future of the Astrodome is also embedded somewhere in this initiative, I would say. If NRG Stadium and where they are now remains the site that both the Rodeo and the Texans continue to play at moving forward.
Are you like me in my assumption that at the end of the day, the most plausible explanation for why people are holding so tight to not wanting to tear the Astrodome down is that there are mob bodies buried somewhere in the foundation? I just assume that Jimmy Hoffa is down there or something. There's something. There's some secret that buried in that concrete that people don't want somebody to find.
It's a better explanation than the actual one, which is, I think people are sentimental about it. I think people are just... People down here in this part of the country, in which I'm not saying it's a flaw or anything like that. I think it's part of what makes this part of the country great. It's a friendly part of the country that likes to look back on things, and they see that dome and they remember all the good times they had in there, and they feel as though if you tear that dome down, that somehow it erases part of your brain.
I think there are some remnants of Judge Hoffhines and his good times activities buried down there, more likely.
Well, this is on brand for our show. I think you're more the cynic of the two of us with stuff like this.
Probably. Yeah.
Back to football for a second. We've been digging into some of these anonymous scouting reports. Probably the big... Seth, I would say right now that one of the more... I would say one of the, not controversial, but one of the more polarizing maybe prospects based on the measurements from the combine is Will Campbell, the tackle from LSU.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his anonymous scouting report from the Bob McGinn article, where Bob McGinn, a longtime columnist who pulls together anonymous scout quotes on different players. And I did a find search on the word arm, and the word arm is cited five times in the Will Campbell scouting report. Because apparently his arms are 5/8 of an inch shorter than you would like them for a tackle that you're drafting this high in the draft. He's viewed as a consensus top 10 pick. You know who's having none of this? Will Campbell himself.
For 2 years, nobody had any measurements on me, and nobody said anything about my play. So now all of a sudden, an arm length decides if I'm a good player or not. I think it's BS. But, you know, any decision makers in the NFL, they don't really care. It's all, you know, people who don't coach, and they don't coach for a reason.
Okay. He's a good interview. So Bob McGinn has four different scouts that are talking about Will Campbell in very small sound bites here. Sound bites are, you know, quotes. And of the four, here are three of them. Here are quotes from three of them. His arms are a little short. That's number one. Number two, if you want a nitpick, his arms aren't all that long. Number three, he's got the feet, he's got the balance, he's got the ability to play tackle, but I want a longer-armed guy. Boy, Ross Tucker had a video about this yesterday. I should have pulled the audio. Ross was pretty he was PO'd that scouts are taking this much.
3/8 of an inch.
3/8 yeah. or whatever it is. And saying, this is why you're not going to draft the guy in the top 10.
When his film says
he should be drafted in the top
Well, 10. But for Ross, I mean, part of it is that people were talking about his shorter arms before they had any measurements on him at all. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing about any of the measurements in scouting. First, it's one data point that you're using to get a whole picture of a player. And with arm length, a lot of it comes down to, okay, does a guy play like he's got short arms? Or if he does have short arms, does he use them well? Because it's like Mike Tyson. Because people love to bring up Mike Tyson in these scenarios. Say, well, like, hey, Mike Tyson had short arms and he did just fine. Right, because he was surgical. Because he used his short arms to an advantage. He got up underneath dudes and carved them up. That Will Campbell doesn't necessarily play like that. So if he were more surgical with his hands, people wouldn't be as concerned about it, but he's kind of sloppy at times and lets guys get into his chest. So scouts were bringing it up, or at least internet scouts. You know, but guys like Daniel Jeremiah, who's a former NFL
scout,
you know, guys that are pretty learned about it and have been doing it for a long time, that's where the concern is that, all right, a guy can have shorter than average arms, but I've got to be sure that he overcomes it in some regard.
Yeah.
So it's still going to be a concern with Will Campbell. The notion that somehow his actual arm measurement is what's going to drive him down 20 spots in the draft or something. Yeah, that's stupid because it doesn't exist, except amongst the dumbest of NFL scouts.
Yeah.
He's really good. Like with his feet, I would say the same thing about Gray Zabel. His arms are a little bit shorter. The North Dakota State interior offensive lineman. He's played tackle, but most people think he's going to be an interior offensive lineman. Like he doesn't use his hands well enough to make you not as concerned about his shorter arms, because it's a double whammy at that point. But he's also really, really good with his feet, and he does a lot of things that other long arm guys don't do. So it's always just balancing those things out.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. Let's get to some headlines. We're proud to partner, by the way, with the Texas Children's Houston Open at Memorial Park Golf Course this weekend. They weren't able to finish the first round yesterday due to darkness, but they're going to get it all made up today. Don't let the weather scare you. They got that rounded yesterday. A whole lot of fun out there. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, more of the PGA's best. They're on the course right here in Houston all weekend long as well. The first round is going to resume this morning, 8:30 a.m., at Memorial Park Golf Course. Second round will begin as scheduled. Score updates, tee times, weather notes, ticket information. You can get all that at tchouopen.com right now. We love the Texas Children's Houston Open at Memorial Park Golf Course. Round two, teeing off at 8:30 a.m. today. Headlines are up next.